Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks, for the last hour of our coverage today as Sail 250 really starts to take off today. A number of the ships coming in, we're waiting to hear about the...
Yeah, I just got a report that the USS Kearsarge, which is the amphibious aircraft carrier, should be passing Jackson Barracks between 12:30 and 12:45. So it's on schedule, and when that happens, there'll be a 21-gun salute from the Louisiana National Guard, Jackson Barracks, to the Kearsarge, and then the Kearsarge will return a salute. Again, a historic moment for us, for Sail 250 New Orleans. As they say, the ships are coming in, and our next guest is probably, along with his team, singularly responsible for the fact that we can host these ships here in the Port of New Orleans, and that's Mike Thomas, who chairs the board.
Yep, chairman of the board of commissioners for the Port of New Orleans. The ships could come up the river, but they may not have any place to go if they didn't take care of their business on their end. Mike, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Dylan. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, it's this is an exciting time. Your team members at the Port of New Orleans have been extraordinary in their focus and attention to ensuring that we can not only host tall ships from many nations, but the United States Navy and the United States Coast Guard.
No, I agree. This is a cooperative effort. We could not do it alone. New Orleans, a company, has been instrumental. So has all of the leaseholders going up and down the river to be able to work with us to allow these ships to be here. Like you said, it's not that many times of a year or a lifetime that you have these types of ships that want to dock at the Port of New Orleans. We had to make several adjustments along with the help of New Orleans Company and the Aquarium Audubon Institute to make sure that it would be safe, not only for the ships, but also for the people who are going to be going on and off these ships to tour these mighty vessels all weekend.
Right, and leadership started with Governor Jeff Landry, right?
Yeah, this was definitely something he was behind 100% with the president. New Orleans is the first city that has this event. It's going to five other cities, but we are proud that we're the host city, the first city, and we're the only city in the South and the only city in the Gulf that's able to host this event.
That's right.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Mark and I have been talking to folks all day, all of the little nuances of the presentation of this, that you don't think about these details, right? Everyone thinks, it's a ship. We just pull up next to these pilings over there. Everything's going to rock and roll and be okay, right?
I've learned more about fenders than I ever thought I would.
No, to prepare, I mean, you're not even thinking about the electrical, the water, much less the safety of the vessel itself, because you don't want to damage the vessel because it has to go to five other ports. So when it's here, we've got to protect it. We've got to have harbor police monitor it. People don't think of that. I mean, I know you do, Noel. You think of that from day one, but the majority of the people say, they just pull up and everything's fine. Well, first of all, some of these are military vessels that, you know, highly sensitive and secret information on them.
Yeah.
We can't just have every person just walking up and seeing something. So it has to be a coordinated effort between the port, Harbor PD, New Orleans Company, the city, and the aquarium, the Audubon Institute, to really, really get these people.
Right, and all of the maritime partners, the maritime industry that stepped up to help us, the pilots and the stevedores and the mooring, the linesmen, everyone has just said, you know, we want to be part of this.
So if you look at the participants in this city, the corporate partners, it's really second to none for them to come and get behind this. You know, New Orleans was one of the only cities that is different than the other five cities because they all have a charitable organization that's able to raise money for their events. And it's a lot easier for them to facilitate the donations and the spending and everything else. We kind of did it organically with the help of New Orleans and Company and the port to try to say, okay, we can kind of do this without having to have more bureaucracy and try to streamline it.
Right, and not to go to the city or the state, and with our hand out, we said let's make this happen on our own.
Correct. This is a community event.
It really is. Really is. A lot going on with the port. We celebrated Maritime Month last Friday. I know we were on the Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about what's happening with the port and the great developments that are happening, particularly downriver.
You know, every year May is Maritime Month, and we had Maritime Day, I believe, last week, and that is a way for the port to really, really showcase our employees. employees and the dedication that they have to this industry. The New Orleans, I like to say, was not found. I mean, the Louisiana Purchase was not bought because of Kansas. Okay, it was purchased because of the Port of New Orleans, going back over 300 years. And our job and our mission, along with our employees, is to make sure that we're here for another 300 years, but to also reward them and showcase them for the stuff they do, whether it's crews, whether it's cargo, whether it's dredging, whether it's protection with Harbor PD. That allows us to really, really showcase those individuals. The port is changing. You know, with the expansion of the Panama Canal and the ships getting wider and bigger, we have a problem at the Crescent City Connection, as everybody knows. The ships will not be able to go underneath that bridge for much longer. Our container port is uptown. It's been there for, you know, years and years and decades, and the people uptown live with it and they understand it and it doesn't bother them. But that has got to change because the ships can't get there. So as everybody knows, we're building Louisiana National Terminal, which is in Violet, Louisiana, in St. Bernard Parish, to be able to accept these larger ships, to be able to move more commerce. You know, the commerce that comes to New Orleans touches 32 states, two Canadian provinces. It's something that is monumental when you think of a port. We're the only deep water port that has six Class One railroads. So you can get a container here to the West Coast if you have to the East Coast, or to the heartland of America simply by coming here. That is not able to be done anywhere else in this country.
That is amazing.
You know, it's interesting, too. We talk about LIT as though it's the first iteration of change. Have y'all ever figured out how many times that this port has actually had to change itself to accommodate for the new vessels? I mean, when you think of the age of this place, this had to happen dozens of times, if not more.
So if you look at Brennan's, right, Brennan's famous Bananas Foster, that was created because they had to figure out a way to use these bananas that were at this port. Well, at that time, that was some of the break bulk that was coming in this port, and it made up a large majority of the imports and the warehouse space that we needed. Fast forward to today, the bananas are in Gulfport because we have bigger and more important cargo that needs to come to the Port of New Orleans, and so bananas have gone. So I know that's a small example, but if you look at how this port has transformed itself from bulk to break bulk to containers, you know, containers only came about within our lifetime. This port has been here for a lot longer than our lifetime, and now almost 80% of the world's commerce is delivered by containers.
Containers.
Right? Whether it's your household supplies, whether it's your furniture, whether it's your automobiles, those are done by containers a lot of times.
And you mentioned the connection with rail. How important was it that the port was able to acquire the Public Belt Railroad?
So that was really a tremendous lifesaver for us during COVID. When we acquired that entity, it allowed us to really market this port a little bit different and allow us to have a synergy that we never had before. I wasn't here, but I've learned that we didn't necessarily not work well with the Public Belt prior, but bringing it in-house and bringing it underneath our jurisdiction has allowed us to really go after a lot of federal grants, along with a Chrissy grants, to expand our footprint and allow us to have more switching, more supplies, and more rail space to allow commerce to be able to move faster.
Very good. Talk about the dynamic nature of the river. Y'all have been working up until now to ensure that the ships can dock safely along the dock area because the silt builds up. I mean, what is going on as we speak, actually?
So if you look at where these ships will be today at the base at Spanish Plaza, the foot of Canal Street in Poydras, that is an area of the river that silts up. It's not a...
Because of the turn.
There's a reason why the French Quarter is the highest spot in the city. It's because that's where all the silt comes and stays, and the river erodes the rest of the river base. For us to be able to get these ships here, we have our own dredge. So for the past month, it has been actively dredging all of this area in front of these docks after we have basically repaired and replaced a lot of these dockers to prepare for these ships so that they wouldn't run aground and they'll be safe. So those are the behind-the-scenes things that nobody really sees and the cost that's associated with this in order to bring this kind of event to this region and this city to allow our citizens to be able to appreciate it. You know, New Orleans was also a military town. If you look at the Battle of New Orleans, there's a reason that military has always had a presence here because of the stronghold of this area. So we're excited to be able to welcome those ships, too.
Yeah,
we've been reminded by a number of the military officials that we've been able to talk to today of that that fact, you know, and the role that it plays here. As we move forward, and you mentioned the LIT a couple of times, we don't really see something other than containerization happening in the very near future, do we?
No. That's where it's going. I mean, if you look at the MSCs of the world, you look at the other shipping companies, they are growing in leaps and bounds, and the ships are getting bigger because they know this is where commerce is moving to in the future.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm glad you brought that up because that's the telltale. Where the shipping industry goes is where your port facilities have to be, right, to accommodate them.
100%. You know, our partners at LIT, one of them is MSC. Our direct partner is TIL, Terminal Investments Limited, which is their port operating arm of their company. It's a family-owned company in Europe. And so they are going to be, in the next 2 years, have almost 1,000 ocean-going container vessels moving product. That's something that we're really excited about them being our partner, because we're able to direct a large amount of commerce to this facility to allow it to be successful.
And those are the ships that will not be able to get underneath the Crescent City connection.
Correct. Yeah. So right now, if you look at this, I think 2 days ago, there was an MSC ship. Those ships are probably 8,000 to 12,000 TEUs. When I say a TEU, it's a 20-foot equivalent unit. So it's basically half of an 18-wheeler trailer, right? Sometimes you see the 40-foot, right. but they measure it by 20 foot. Now the Panama Canal can have a 24,000 TEU ship. We're not going to have those here. We're probably going to have close to 16,000. But if you look at the size difference, it's almost double of what we can do now. So that's going to allow us to get those containers off of that vessel in a very, very efficient manner, get them on the trucks, then go through the St. Bernard Transportation Corridor that's going to be created, to not have those trucks on parish roads in St. Bernard, but be able to get them to the interstate system to allow them to make more turns. That's where the real economics comes in. These shippers want to get their product to a distribution center, whether it's Amazon, whether it's Google, whatever that may be, quickly, and then turn that truck around, get back to the port, pick up another container, and go. So where the port is now, you know, you have to go through downtown, you have to go through a little bit of uptown, you're on Chapultepec. It's somewhat of a monumental task, depending on what time of day it is, to get through that. Where we're going to be, we're not going to have hardly any traffic problems. Those trucks will be able to go and make those turns. And instead of getting maybe one or two a day, they may be able to get four or six a day, which is going to dramatically increase their productivity.
And a strong economic impact for not only the region, but specifically St. Bernard Parish.
Oh, if you look at what's going to happen in St. Bernard Parish, when this project is full built, right, they're going to get $33 million every year of increased taxes. I want to say their budget right now, and I don't want to be quoted on this, but it's around $25 to $29 million. So if you look at what that community has endured since Katrina, right, went from 80,000 people to almost zero. Now they're back at about 40,000. All of the federal improvements through FEMA, whether it's recreation, whether it's sewers, whether it's drainage, those have all been there for a better part of 20 years, because we're coming up on the 20th anniversary, 21st anniversary of Katrina. They need improvements. With a reduced tax base, it's hard for them to have those improvements. Right. It's hard for them to compete with the different sheriff's departments in the region, the different state police, to keep those officers there to protect those citizens. It's hard to make the improvements that are necessary to water, to sewage, to drainage, to the roads. We're going to give them the capacity to be able to do all of that very quickly.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the word transformational sometimes is overused, but in this case, it's so appropriate because it truly is. I mean, we are stepping into where the future is going to be.
And if we want to compete,
the future is here now already, right?
And if we want to compete, we've got to move in this direction.
So that's, you'll get two things: competition, right? Houston is very, very, very competitive at what they do, and so is Mobile. And those have been the two leading ports that have been coming after New Orleans for the better part of 100 years.
Yeah.
Now it's our time to kind of take charge and move into that forefront. This is going to give those people of St. Bernard a unique opportunity. We're working very close with Nunez Community College to have the curriculum for all of the traits that are needed in a port facility, whether it's a crane operator, whether it's a mechanic, whether it's an electrician, whether it's an accounting. People don't think that you still need bookkeepers, that you still need office staff to run something like this, right? It's just not the guys, the longshoremen that are on the docks. Those citizens and those residents will be able to go to that community college, support their home, and they'll be able to work at the port and make a really, really good living, then raise their family in a area, in a town, in a city that's where they want to be.
Right.
Like, that's what they've told us. We don't want to leave. We want to stay here, and that's why we came back.
So where is the process now?
So the process now is basically multiple fronts. So we have completed our agreement with our partners, Ports of America and TIL. So we have an agreement with them. We're now in the process of finalizing our permit with the Corps, which should come in the next couple of weeks. And parallel to that, we're dealing with our contracts, our engineers, to get 100% on the plan. So we have, obviously, the plans in the back in terms of the yard itself, and then you have the wharfs and the docks, which are in the front, that are a little bit more technical than clearing trees and whatnot. So that's, we're moving on all of those fronts at the same time in order to achieve a goal with this governor that we can probably break ground in 2026.
That's fantastic.
And the corridor fits in when? That seems to be the number one issue.
What's that?
The corridor.
The corridor.
So the way that we have already started that process with DOTD, we have a cooperative endeavor agreement with St. Bernard Parish and DOTD and a port to go and do the environmental studies. We've RTC has did their studies in terms of where this road is going to be located. They gave us three different alternatives. Obviously, we are in favor of any alternative that does not impact Judge Perez and St. Bernard Highway, so the residents of Jefferson Parish, of St. Bernard Parish. We want to get that commerce away from that and across the levee and get to the interstate as quick as possible, and we think we have a way to do that. Once those environmentals are done, then it goes out to the partnership, right? We're going to have a partnership that's going to have a private entity come in, similar to what's happening at the bridge in Lake Charles Parish, come in and basically price it out, and then we're going to discuss tolls and all that that's accommodated. So that's going to be another parallel path, but the port and the state is only going to be involved a small amount because it's a P3 partnership with an outside entity.
Yep. Very good. Well, y'all have got the Absolutely. Focus for sure. One more question. The cruise industry seems to be just doing so well now. Speaking of competing with Mobile in Houston, we're seeming like knocking it out of the park, right?
So it's knocking out of the park is an understatement. You know, every meeting we hear how the parking capacity here is 110% for cruise, how we're setting records every day for passengers. Another issue with this bridge is those cruise ships are too tall. Yeah. They can't go north, right? They can't go to Gretna if we wanted to do that. They can't go to Kenner. So we're going to have to figure out where to build other terminals. Prior to Lit being the focus, because that has just kind of been the shining star, we've been in the works for a long time to try to figure out how can we have more berth for cruise ships, mm-hmm. because the demand is there. Our partners, whether they're Norwegian Cruise Lines or Disney or Royal Caribbean, all say, well, find us another place. You know, it's not like Miami. They just dredge and then build more area to put another ship. We can't do that. So yeah. We are aggressively working with our partners to find out their needs and to figure out where on this river is a good place to put another cruise terminal, whether that's East Bank or West Bank.
Exciting.
The majority of people that come here drive. Yeah. It's not that much flying. Yeah. So they come in, they either come in the day before, or they spend the night, or they spend the night after, which is a huge...
Two vacations.
Right, a huge tourism boost to the city.
And y'all should be able to figure it out. I mean, these ships are only, 800-900 feet in length?
Right. I mean, they're the puppies.
You know, they look like the Kearsarge in a moment. Yeah. Mike, thank you so very much for what the port is doing and what y'all have done to help make this Sail 250 New Orleans a success.
No, thank you, Mark. And without your leadership and Walt's leadership, we would not be here. So I appreciate that. And without your ongoing support of the port and allowing us to come in here and spread our message to give this community some information on really, really how special not only this event is, but so is the city and this port.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today. We know you're busy. We really appreciate it. And congratulations on Sail 250 and the progress made on Lit as well. We're very excited about that. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. Mark Romig, Newell Norman. We're here at the Julia Street Wharf for Sail 250. We've been talking to a lot of folks, providing the necessary information about all of the things to do, so many free activities. If you're looking for something to do this weekend, it shouldn't be that difficult to figure this out. You just have to go to sail250neworleans.com, right?
Yeah, sail250.com gives you all the information. Sail250neworleans.com gives you all the information you need, the schedule of events, what time the ship tours are happening, photos of all the ships coming in. And by the way, we have the USS Kearsarge just now passing Jackson Barracks. This is the large amphibious aircraft carrier, so Now's the time to head on down to the Gold Ring Wildenberg Riverfront Park and park yourself, maybe grab a cafe au lait and some beignets and watch that beautiful ship come in.
Now, a lot of what is going on down here actually impacts and is actually, in many respects, operated by the Audubon Institute. And Mike Sawyer, the president and CEO of the Audubon Nature Institute, joins us. Mike, welcome to the show.
It's always good to be with you here, Noel.
Absolutely. You guys have been incredibly busy. You just finished with French Quarter Fest, which was a huge success. I think it was one of the biggest ever, right?
Truly was. With the expanded footprint of the park, you know, it just was a wonderful experience for everyone, and now we're happy to show it off for this great event.
Yeah, and let me tell you something, that secret won't last long. I was down that way for French Quarter Fest. That's the best place to sit. No, I mean, it was gorgeous. Y'all did a great job, really.
Oh, well, thanks. You know, a lot of time and effort went into the planning and the delivery of the project, and we just couldn't be more happy with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am saying the best way to experience this will be along Wildenberg, Golden Ring Wildenberg Riverfront Park this weekend, along with the Julia Street area where the U.S. Navy and Coast Guard will be headquartered. So congratulations to you and to your team, Mike. Everyone has rallied around ensuring that the hospitality is at the highest level. I give credit to Cara Banish and Leslie Ballard and your entire production team.
Thanks. We have a really great team of professionals, and I got to tell you, even after a big event like the French Quarter Festival, you wouldn't know 2 days later that there was hundreds of thousands of people out there. They're doing everything they can to keep it fresh and new and safe, and everyone's really excited about the new product.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of, with this new development, I think y'all have another one planned not long after that, right?
We do. To do phase one, which is a civic park, 160,000 square foot warehouse was demolished. The next phase is an adjacent 100,000 square foot warehouse, and we're looking at concepts that really bring recreation and entertainment to that area, and really will be a new destination and a draw both for locals and tourists alike.
Yeah. I mean, which expands that footprint, will be one of the largest riverfront footprints
in the entire country, for sure.
At that point in time, that's incredible. When you think about the opportunity here with these vessels being able to have multiple vantage points of the tall ships, it's really a huge addition for us and really makes this a lot more flexible, right?
Certainly. I mean, one of the biggest advantages now, and we've said it before, that now people can readily see that we are a riverfront city, and we have a lot of opportunities to do new events that we haven't had before, and we're working on that programming right now.
Yeah, we were just talking to Mike Thomas with the Port of New Orleans, and he was talking about the partnership that was important to be ready for the ships to come into New Orleans, working with Audubon Nature Institute and Port of New Orleans and New Orleans and Company with guidance from Governor Landry. We're here, and I think this shows that what we can do going forward, that we'd love to see tall ships here on a regular basis.
Well, we did make improvements to the wharf. We strengthened things to be able to host any number of different events, made investments over the years of time, and it's only going to serve us in the future.
Yeah. Now, this footprint is not only down at the riverfront, but you're going to be hosting some activity up at Audubon Zoo and the Fly.
We are, and we're really excited and honored to be the host for what we call Family Day at Audubon Zoo, and the official Sail 250 Family Fun and Sports Day at the Fly, you know, or the Riverview Park. So there'll be a soccer tournament featuring all the different countries that are going to be doing a round robin tournament. That's going to be exciting to watch. But then we are going to host Family Day at the zoo, which is, you know, one of the best zoos in the entire nation. So we're proud to offer that to these special visitors.
Yeah, the Carrollton Boosters are helping out over at the Fly, and the public can come and watch this. I think there's something like six or seven round robin events that will occur around soccer.
And these are the sailors themselves?
Yeah, yeah.
So the sailors themselves will be playing each other in soccer.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think there's six or eight countries that are represented.
Oh, yeah. There'll be some highly spirited competition out at the Fly on Sunday.
And all of these countries take their soccer very seriously.
Yes, that's football. That's football to them.
Football to them,
football
right?
Football to them.
Indeed.
And, you know, with the FIFA World Cup just around the corner, there'll be a little bit more, I think, some jawing going back and forth. Right. But
You don't think there's going to be some jawbone going on?
I think so. Mike, off to another subject, which is about you and your work at the Audubon Nature Institute, particularly the zoo. I understand you've experienced some very interesting surgeries.
Well, you know, when you're
not yours.
Yeah, when your office is next to an animal hospital, you know, you do have an opportunity to walk in and observe some things under all the right conditions. And everything from a root canal on a jaguar to a root canal on a lion to a hernia surgery on a bobcat. You know, we have a really great team of vets and staff who really take care of our animals. There are 3,000 animals in our entire collection. So we're really, it's really an honor for me to be able to observe, and they always like bringing me in, let me see what's going on. So I wait until everybody is under anesthesia before I come in, but it's really fun to watch.
You become a surgical assistant there.
Indeed.
And your root canal is scheduled for when?
It's right next door.
That's right.
A number of museums within the Audubon Nature Institute family, one very important one amongst all of them, the Species Survival Center. Would you speak to that?
Sure. 1,100 acres on the West Bank of New Orleans, and that is a research center that Freeport-McMoRan Species Survival Center. And, you know, we have animals that we breed out there. There's probably 6 or 8 giraffes in any one time that we breed for to go anywhere around the world. We do research on endangered species. We have a group of scientists there that have regular activity regarding that. We look at we have grants that we take care of whooping cranes, Mississippi whooping cranes. We have all kinds of things happening on the West Bank that people really aren't aware of in New Orleans as much, but it is open to the public to tour the Wilderness Trail.
That's the lower coast of Algiers, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, and then you also have a specialist on staff that deals with lions.
We do. Our Andrew Hartson is in charge of the Species Survival Plan for the American Zoos and Aquariums, and he does that for the entire country. So he knows who has lions, who needs lions, who's going to get lions, where they should go. He's in charge of that plan, and we're really proud of the work that he does.
And you just had some lions birth at the zoo.
3 lion cubs that were born in October. It's amazing how they double in size about every 2 weeks. There was a time when I could get up close and personal with them, you know, even though their mom didn't like that very much, I can tell you that. But they're just, you know, putting them out in the exhibit and letting them frolic and play and having people come and watch them has just been a real joy. And not only that, we also have 3 new zebras at the zoo. We haven't had zebras since 2019. These zebras are some of the rarest zebras in the entire world in captivity. There's about 60 of them. They're called mountain zebras, and they are just spectacular. And they're
unique because their stripes are different, right?
Yeah, they're tan and brown. I was expecting black and white like most people would. They got off that trailer and went, whoa, these are different, and they're beautiful, and they are intermingling or cohabitating with the giraffes because that's what they do in the wild.
Very good. Back to the lions for a moment. Those 3 cubs will be with us for how long, and then do the all 3 leave us, or does one stay back, or what happens?
Well, I'm told that the male in particular in about 18 months will be fully grown, and we'll have to find a home for him to start his own pride. There's a point in time where he'll challenge, or his dad will challenge him, or vice versa, I'm told. Again, I'm learning about all this from Andrew. He's the expert. The gals depends on where they need to go. I mean, they can stay with us longer, but they'll also need to go, and they'll be ready for breeding, you know, when they're grown adults.
Very good.
That's and people don't realize how difficult it is to birth in captivity. It presents a lot of different challenges, right?
It does. You know, Andrew will tell you stories about what we call lion tender, you know, where you have to put a male and a female together and have them interact and get used to each other and court each other and things like that. It's really fun to watch, and it's interesting to hear him tell a story about how much interaction they have, how they manage, how much interaction they have, and then what are the reactions of the sisters, the other girls that are in the den as well, or in the pride, you know, and how do they feel about that? So it's really fun to watch. I mean, and we're fortunate that we have people at Audubon who really, really understand the intricacies.
Well, let's go just a couple of blocks from here to your aquarium, where a lot of our visitors that come down for the tall ships, they'll be right there in the plaza area. What are they seeing at the aquarium at present?
Well, in 2024, we combined the aquarium and the insectarium together, and we have one of the nicest facilities in the entire country. And we're excited to be able to host not only the people who are coming in on our ships, but anytime we have an event downtown, we tend to have an uptick in activity at the aquarium as well. This past year, two new lemon sharks that were introduced at the aquarium. Always a great collection of animals at the aquarium, and we offer camps and wild encounters that really give people a better view of what we do in the marine world.
That Gulf exhibit is where the sharks are located, along with a number of other species.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's magnificent. You know, to me, that's one of the most calming and soothing places to go. You can sit on the bench and just witness, you know, the activity. It's it brings the blood pressure down.
The beauties of the natural world.
That's right. That's right.
And how has that combination of the insectarium and the aquarium worked out? I mean, it seems one complements the other very well.
They really do. And, you know, for someone to be able to buy one ticket and experience both, you know, and they're so well integrated and it's easier to navigate. So it's been a real win for us. We're still waiting for a bigger recovery from the pandemic, you know, more people to come to the city. That's the key for us, because as a top attraction, certainly the top family attraction in town, we depend on that market at the aquarium to make it successful.
Yeah.
Do y'all see patterns changing? I mean, I know you have your finger on the pulse of how that works, of the driving population here and as an attraction. Because, I mean, that was always the thing. Go to the zoo. You know,
sure.
You go to San Diego, you see the zoo, right? You know.
Yeah, I have a son who's in San Diego right now. He goes, "I'm going to the zoo, Dad." I said, "Of course you are." And you can't help but think that that's at the top of people's list when they come to New Orleans, because Audubon has such a stellar reputation, you know, and we're unique in that we offer a collection of attractions and museums. So we, you know, you can go online and buy a ticket to any number of our things on one site. So you know, as tourism, individual leisure tourism improves, you know, we're expecting a lift on that as well. So hopefully a good summer for us. We're all looking forward to that. We're bringing Peppa Pig and George back to the aquarium, which was a big hit last summer. I couldn't believe it. Over 3 days, I think we hosted 10,000 people.
Wow.
Excellent. Looking forward to that as well.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Michael, for joining us. We really appreciate it. Thank you for the level of cooperation. Obviously, this was very much a collaborative effort of a lot of folks having to come together. And, you know, we've had difficult times here, and it's hard, you know, to make this happen. And thankfully, we have a very giving corporate partnership. You guys have had great corporate partners for your organization for a long time, and I know they played an integral role in the growth of the Audubon Institute.
Yeah, and we couldn't do Sail 250 New Orleans without the Audubon Nature Institute, so thank you so very much. We look forward to a very exciting several days ahead, and when we bid them adieu on Monday morning, June 1st, hope you'll join us for the blessing, and as we say goodbye to the ships, but let's get them here first. Right?
I wouldn't miss it for the world. Thank you, Mark.
Great.
Mike Sawaya, the president and CEO of the Audubon Nature Institute. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. I'm Newell, and he's Mark Romig joins us. This has been fun. I like this.
Let's do this again.
I
250 years from now.
Yeah. No.
Who knows? Science may be able to allow.
You might
that
be
happen.
Able to survive that. To not like to be. I'm not. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before, and that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, I got to tell you, this has been a lot of fun today. We've seen a lot of military folks moving around here. I mean, just a lot of activity, a lot of action from all different branches. We were just watching video Mark had on his phone of the USS Kearsarge that was just passing Jackson Barracks. We thought we'd hear the cannon fire, but we didn't.
No, we didn't hear it. The 21-gun salute did happen, and the ship is now moving past into the lower Ninth Ward, up the river. So we should see it here at Julia Street shortly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exciting times. Ladies and gentlemen, this is it for New Orleans. We are the inaugural port for Sail 250, joining Norfolk, Baltimore, New York, and Boston later this summer. We can't be more excited to be able to host these 3,000 crew members and really the ships from around the world here.
All of this in celebration of a country that's 250 years old.
Or young.
Young.
That's right. Because remember, we're going to do this again.
Yeah, we're going to do this for the
250 years.
Yeah.
Thank you. And thank you all for being here. I think being able to tell this story through the eyes and the words of many of our partners makes it very, very special for your listeners. And again, the action's happening now, so come on down to the riverfront over the next several days.
And if you've never been on a tall ship, you have several times, Mark. Describe that experience. It is, you know, you study history in school, you see it,
yeah,
you watch movies.
It's a step back in time.
You see them in the movies. But when you get on that ship, it's an experience like no other.
It's a step back in time with the sails and the lines and, of course, the humanity, the crew members that are given their lives to learn seamanship, because many of these tall ships are training ships for the future members of the country's military, particularly the Navy. So take advantage of it. And also, if you've never been on an amphibious aircraft carrier, come down and yeah, tour the Kearsarge, because it is 800-plus feet of pure massive force.
Man, lot of steel. I really enjoyed the conversation, Mark, that you and I had with Lieutenant General Len Anderson, who is head of the reserve here.
And Marine Forces South.
Very impressive.
A great gentleman who has made the announcement today on air that this is where he's going to make his home after he moves on.
A Top Gun graduate. I don't know if you saw the Top Gun medallion there on his chest, but it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, very impressive. And he leads a great force of men and women. Later on this afternoon, the mayor will officially welcome the Kearsarge Pierside, as all cities are having the mayors do this, which will be another expression of the hospitality that the city can put forward.
And it's been very exciting, too, I think, with Mayor Helena Moreno. There's been a lot of momentum and, around this. And as I was at both Jazz Fest and French Quarter Fest, running into people I hadn't seen in a while, and I'm sure you had the same experience, there's just this positive vibe that's out there.
It's the same enthusiasm I'm hearing about the Saints.
Yeah.
If you think about it, I mean, there's a spirit of can-do. And I don't mean to equate the Saints in the city, but it's
sometimes
same. You know, if you're feeling good about something, you're going to put extra energy into it. And I think people are really feeling good about things.
Well, the thing, too, is that we have more cheerleaders.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, everybody wants to be on a winning team. And when the team's winning.
And we can do it.
You know, and I mean that figuratively for the city. Everybody wants to be the cheerleader.
That's right. And we'll keep moving them chains.
Absolutely. And hopefully you call a game in France.
Well,
you said you got it in French already. Go ahead, say it.
Now you see, you got me on the spot.
Nah, come on.
Avancisation.
There you go.
Something like that. So anybody out there speaking French and want to correct me, go ahead and call the station.
Or better yet, tell me how I got this Portuguese thing in my head.
It's because of Emeril Lagasse. I told you. You're okay.
All righty, folks. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870. We'll check in with Scoot to see what he has coming your way when we return. Stay with us. So, folks, a big thanks to New Orleans & Company, Mark Romig. Great job today, Mark, pulling all of this
Thank
together.
Thank you very much. It's great being with you.
Your team really enjoyed it. Thank you so much. Scoot's with us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Is there enough room on that thing to turn it into a love boat? I mean,
these boats are huge.
But I bet those berths are kind of small, you know?
Yeah.
They're hammocks on some of them.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they're hammocks.
Hey, that's something I haven't tried. All right, listen, we're going to talk about...
You expect us to believe that?
We're going to talk about the race last night at Texas and a bunch of other stuff.
All right.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.